This is an ABC podcast.
We did have bird watchers coming in here frequently. I think we have over 50 different species of birds. We did have a wombat at one time, but I don't think he's here anymore. But yeah, it's very nice being able... Gungahlin Cemetery is beautiful because it's like a nature park.
Wow, that must be, yeah, really nice space for people to have their loved ones buried, I suppose.
How much have you thought about where you'd like your remains to end up? It's a morbid question, I know, but eventually it's going to happen. And one option could be the place you're hearing right now. I'm Stephen Smiley, and today on The Signal, from compost to liquefying, cremation to burial, the way we're handling our dead is changing. So what will your last rites look like? Okay, so I'm here today with our reporter, Claudia Long. And Claudia, you're here to talk about planning your own death, which seems to have become a bit of a preoccupation for you lately. Can I ask, how did this happen to you?
Well, that's a bit of a long story, but for the purposes of this episode, let's just say it actually starts with my love of gardening.
Oh, I wasn't expecting that.
Well, let me explain. So I use a lot of compost doing that, and a friend sent me a link to a new funeral home in the US that basically composts your body after you die.
It is called Recompose, the first business of its kind, and it's set to open in Seattle in 2021.
The human composting company is taking shape in Soto.
When someone dies, their body is taken to a human composting facility. This begins the gentle transformation from human to soil.
So I thought that might be neat, you know. Can I line that up for myself?
Have we got anything that comes close to this in Australia?
There's a few options, I guess, if you don't want to be buried in a box or cremated. You can be dissolved with water cremation, where chemicals liquefy your body in a few hours and you basically become fertilizer.
Oh, wow.
And to be honest, that kind of creeps me out a bit. So I found something a bit closer to composting called natural burial. And luckily for me, I guess, we actually have a natural burial site here not far from where I live in Canberra. So I went to check it out with Philip and Michelle from the Gungahlin Cemetery.
And then we also have an in-between, so we've got a lawn with a nice little stone at the head.
Yes, okay.
And, of course, our natural burial area.
And we're here. We've arrived.
So this is our natural burial area. It was opened about 6 years ago.
To be honest, I didn't even realise we'd arrived at the natural burial ground until they told me, because it just looked like regular bush.
Yeah, this little section's quite full, isn't it, Michelle?
Yeah. So you'll see the tree plantings, the ground cover plantings. The family chooses from a list of natives that we provide, and then we will plant that native on the grave, and that'll be a marker for the family, so they come and know that's mum's tree or dad's tree. And then you can see the little pole grasses around. That's where we've got our RFID chips. This one here is a really good example of a new planting. And then you can just see there that that's the pole, so we know where to pull the wand over.
The wand?
Yeah, a wand. So there aren't any headstones anywhere. Instead, they bury the bodies with microchips. And you use this little wand to find whose remains are buried where.
So you can see where the sites, the recent sites are from the mounds, and they'll settle over time. But some of the older sites that you might not notice is where there's a grass grown, there's a grave there.
So from above ground, you might not notice the difference right away.
Yeah, exactly. But while we were walking through, I actually noticed there was this weird metal frame set up a few metres away, and it turned out they were actually preparing a plot for burial.
Right, so you've just opened the lid on this, and it looks like it goes about a metre and a half down.
So that's about 1,300 millimetres deep, and a standard double-depth grave will go down to 1,800 millimetres.
And there's a lot of straw, I guess, kind of padding out the bottom of this grave. What's that for?
Just for appearance, because it's a standard thing that we do. If we're in an area with a high water table, it could be wet. You're never quite sure, so that's our standard procedure.
And in regards to coffins and caskets, there's a huge variety that you can have here in the natural burial area, from wicker baskets, untreated natural timber, with the exception of a few screws, that's fine. Also, shrouds are very popular in this area as well. All of this area you can see in front of us, this is all for future extension. So I think that in this cemetery we have about 40 to 50 years capacity left.
And I reckon that's what I'm going to do. So I decided to put in my will that if I die while I'm still living in Canberra, that's where I'd like to end up. Hopefully a very, very long time from now.
I really hope that too, friend.
Oh, thank you. The other thing, though, is that in figuring this out, I kind of realised that there's this whole other side to this ritual equation that I need to be thinking about, the funeral. So I started doing more research, and it turns out that planning your own funeral isn't actually that straightforward.
I'm not a religious person, but I do like good ritual. My name is Dr. Margaret Gibson, and I'm a senior lecturer at Griffith University and part of the Griffith Centre for Social and Cultural Research. The thing about burial is that it means that you actually have a place in which to put the deceased. And so it marks a place in the land, on the ground, that is really partly there for the survivors. They actually have a place to go to. So it is fundamentally connected to continuing our bonds with the dead and enabling us to say, this person lived, they've died, and here is what remains of them. So a lot of our rituals are, of course, for the dead, and they're often about acknowledging that the dead have now left the living and are transitioning to some kind of state. So all rituals are about transitioning from one state to another, from life to death, from being part of the living community and then becoming part of the community of the dead or being part of the community of ancestors. So burial, you know, has been really important in creating these forms of communities of the dead, but also providing a kind of physical marker of that this person once existed and they're still in some sense part of the world in which we live, even though they've died.
Margaret, I'm finding working out how to plan for my own death really complicated.
You know why? I mean, there's a lot of conversation around that. It's partly because the funeral industry doesn't want people to take control of it, basically, because, you know, as long as it remains an industry, it can, you know, basically regulate what people do. But it is difficult because it's hard to find the information around what can you legally do. Like, how do you get hold of, how do people get hold of your body? Where can it be transported to? All that sort of stuff. You know, can I just get a body put in, you know, a coffin put in a park and have a funeral there? Is that okay to do that? You know, what sort of permissions do I need around that? I mean, it's quite mysterious, all this stuff, and it's not easy to find knowledge. But I think people do plan their funerals, but I guess as a culture, we don't really know that we have probably a lot more control over the kind of funeral that we want than we might be led to believe.
Okay, so clearly there is a lot to consider.
Yeah, and when we say there's a lot to consider, there really are a lot of options, which for me, as a frankly indecisive person, I feel a bit stressed out by. So after quite a few hours, I tracked down a funeral home and decided to start making a plan.
This is for your own funeral.
For my own funeral. So this is me calling Amy Sager. She's the general manager of Tender Funerals, which is a not-for-profit funeral home based in the Illawarra in New South Wales. They're planning on setting up in Canberra, so they should have everything in place before I die.
So I think what would make sense is to start by asking about whether you would like to have your body cremated or buried.
I think I would like to be buried.
And so do you have any idea in mind at present what you would like your funeral to look like?
Yeah, I find the idea of natural funerals quite appealing. So, like, we've got a natural burial ground here in Canberra and I would quite like to be buried there in a basket, one of the wicker baskets with a shroud.
All right, so things are sounding fairly straightforward so far.
Totally, but there's a whole bunch of stuff that I had never considered.
Okay, so now while we're on that conversation of the care that your body would receive, I'd really like to know how you feel about intrusive procedures being performed after someone's died.
Oh, what's an intrusive procedure?
So that might involve doing things like closing your eyes or closing your mouth. Not everyone requires that. Some people pass away with their mouth closed or their eyes closed. But if you were in a condition where you passed away with your eyes and mouth open, would you prefer to have them closed and us using different products to do that and procedures to do that?
Oh, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I think, I would be kind of creeped out if I went to a funeral and somebody's eyes were open. So that's fine by me. Yeah, please close them.
Absolutely. You know, you've got a gut reaction about that. Oh, definitely close my eyes. Some people have a gut reaction the other way, so it's really great to be clear on that.
Well, it's nice to know if I do attend your funeral, you won't be staring at me.
I think so too. So this whole consultation took about an hour because we discussed everything from music to location, celebrants, flowers, who's going to handle the coffin, the whole thing.
Sounds very comprehensive.
Yeah, and to be honest, with all the options, it did actually make me wonder how anyone navigates these questions. So to answer that, I went back to Margaret Gibson.
The possibilities are much greater than they've ever been before. There's a lot more, you know, choice around how you want to farewell a person that you loved.
And cremation's the most popular choice I've heard. Why is that?
Cremation is, it just gives people more options, and it's partly to do with the fact that we are much more mobile populations, so people often want to transport their deceased loved ones with them in the form of ashes, but they also want to have forms of ritual that are meaningful for the person who has died. So they want to scatter the ashes at significant places to do with their identity or shared family or memories and what have you. So cremation offers a lot more options in terms of the disposal of ashes and alternative kinds of rituals. It's another way of marking the finality and transitioning the body into another form. And some people prefer that idea of not being a body decomposing in the ground, you know. Some people find it a cleaner kind of ritual and more, I guess, more finite in that sense. And apart from the popularity of cremations, there's also this kind of trend towards having no funeral whatsoever. So the body is just literally taken to the crematorium and then that's it. So I find that interesting. I think cost is a real factor for people. I also think that in some cases it can be because the nature of the deceased person maybe didn't want that and was not particularly into any kind of forms of ceremony or celebration of their life. They just wanted to keep it really simple. And so it can be about carrying out the wishes of the person who has died. But I'm not sure whether in the long term that is necessarily a good thing because, you know, funerals are about recognizing in this communal way that someone has died. It's a symbolic act of that recognition, but it's also connected to the capacity to be able to grieve. So I think there's probably a number of factors, but certainly I think cost is one of them.
Right, so the trends around death rituals are changing and increasingly people are opting for cremation. What about natural burials, though? Because there was a mention earlier that the place in Canberra where you'd like to be buried, Claudia, that place will fill up in about 40 years.
Well, Margaret reckons there might be a few more natural burial grounds to choose from by the time I go.
I guess the thing about natural burial is that it creates kind of a multiple space environment. It doesn't necessarily look like a cemetery as such, even though it can be functioning as a cemetery. It looks more like parkland and forest. And so it's much more about a green space than a death space. Probably these natural burials are going to be seen as more valuable as urban assets because they can be sort of seen more as these multifunctional spaces that people can spend time in and walk through and exercise and, you know, do all those sorts of things. I mean, it's not as if people don't necessarily run through your traditional cemeteries and do exercises, but they're probably a little bit more in that tradition of sacred space, you know, connected to religious traditions. Whereas I think green spaces or natural burial spaces just provide, you know, a much more different kind of connection to the way in which we imagine and literally put the dead.
So picnics and jogging in the natural burial grounds. I guess just don't stray too far from the path.
Well, there is a potential stumbling block.
Because the thing about cemeteries, they're always in the spaces of the living. Even if you look at the histories of cities, what you'll notice is that cemeteries are often put on the outskirts of a city, but then as cities grow, they become, those outskirts become the inner city and then they keep on moving further out. The difficulty for, you know, local governments getting approvals to have cemeteries is that there's always that question of where are they going to be and are they going to be close to where people live, right? And the priority is usually to have space for housing and things, and housing and cemeteries don't really go well together in the public imagination. But space remains an issue, particularly when you look at Australia, where we have the concentrations of our populations. It is all around, you know, the eastern seaboard. We live in some ways for a small population quite densely in city places, and that's where land is much more valuable and you know, it's much more scarce, I guess.
All right, so to distill all of this down, our cemeteries and ceremonies and rituals are all changing pretty dramatically, so much so that it's almost impossible to really say definitively what this space will look like in, say, 50 or 60 years from now, when hopefully it will be you or me who's being farewelled.
Well, yeah, that's true. And Margaret says another thing to bear in mind here is that it's not necessarily you or me who will get the final word on our send-offs either. Because even with the trends we're seeing today, the funeral and the cremation or the burial, they're all fundamentally about the people that the deceased person leaves behind.
We're in this period of time where you'll have in families quite different orientations towards the most appropriate way to recognise that someone has died. And you will have members of family who want something religious, and you will have members of family who definitely do not want that. And so I think there are quite difficult negotiations that can go on in families when you've, particularly if you've got very contrasting value systems around how to do these sorts of important social rituals.
That is the signal for today and for this week. Go and enjoy your life.
Yeah, breathe it in. And if you want to get in touch with us, our email is thesignal@abc.net.au.
We'll catch you on Monday.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.